is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
We require our guys to play so hard. Everybody wants to play 40 minutes, but how hard we play, we're like, guys, you can't be that intense with 40 minutes. And I think guys see that. They see how tired they are, and they're willing to sacrifice those minutes because of what we're trying to accomplish, which is winning a Horizon League championship.
Rob Summers is entering his third season as a men's basketball assistant coach at Cleveland State University. Summers spent the previous two seasons as an assistant coach at James Madison after serving as the head coach at Division II Urbana, where he headed the program for three seasons. Prior to that, he was the director of operations at James Madison for the 2013-2014 season after a two-year stint at Glenville State, where he was the associate head coach and compliance coordinator. A graduate of Gahanna Lincoln High School, Summers started a sterling collegiate career at Penn State, where he appeared in 56 games from 2002 to 2004. After transferring to West Virginia, he played three seasons under head coach John Beilein, where he was a three-time Big East Academic All-Star. As a senior, he led West Virginia to a win in the NIT Championship, starting 36 games and shooting 63% from the field. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Dan Madhavapullo, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads mentorship program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Take some notes as you listen to this episode with Rob Summers, men's basketball assistant coach at Cleveland State University. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, who unfortunately is feeling a little bit under the weather, but I am pleased to be joined by men's basketball assistant coach at Cleveland State University, Rob Summers. Rob, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Hey, Mike. Hey, glad to be here. Excited to talk to you for a while tonight.
Absolutely. Looking forward to digging into all the things that you've been able to do in your career in basketball. I want to start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about how you got introduced to the game, what some of your first memories are.
Well, I actually grew up a baseball player. I loved baseball. My dad was a minor league baseball player. He actually played for the Cincinnati Reds farm team. And so he got me into that at a young age, and grew up on the south side of Chicago, playing baseball about till like third grade, I believe. And then a lot of my classmates were playing the local rec center, and I wasn't very tall. You know, I kind of hit my growth spurt later on in life, so I wasn't a super tall, third grader, but those guys were just all in the gym, and I kind of just kept, they kept leaving the baseball mat, the baseball diamond, and going to play basketball and kind of followed them there. And it's kind of a wrap from going forward after that.
When you think about growing up and
playing multiple sports. As you got into middle school, high school, did you still play some other sports, or at what point did you start to focus in on basketball?
It was about my freshman year of high school. I think my dad, you know, he kind of came to me and was like, look, if you want to really get great at something and, you know, possibly get a scholarship at the, you know, the Division I level, you might want to start focusing on one thing specifically. So it was around that time that, you know, I kind of hung up the baseball mitt and decided that basketball was going to be kind of my bread and butter and, you know, get a free education.
What did that look like for you when you made that decision to go and start to focus in specifically on basketball in terms of how did you go about getting better? What did your summers look like? Just tell us a little bit about how you went about improving and trying to reach that goal of getting a D1 scholarship.
Well, it was at that point, my freshman year, we actually moved from Chicago to Columbus. So was in the process of moving as well as, you know, deciding to focus strictly on basketball. And so I didn't know much about the AAU scene and also was moving to a whole different, you know, school district where no one really knew me. You know, I was tall. I was 6'4" as a freshman. But a lot of those guys kind of grow up through the middle school, you know, system. And, you know, the high school coaches kind of know the kids that are, you know, in the neighborhood. So I was a new kid on the block down there in Gahanna, Ohio, and was able to kind of focus a little bit in the summer times on going to some camps, five-star camp, blue chip camp down in Kentucky, and just really trying to get better. You know, I was tall. I was lanky. I hit a growth spurt. So I was kind of getting used to my body at that time. I was a guard before. And then I had to go right into the post, and I was, you know, really skinny, you know, probably 130 pounds soaking wet at that time. So doing that was weird. But I think once I started kind of getting used to my body and how everything was working around the game, I started playing AAU basketball and went on to, you know, play for All Ohio, which was one of the premier AAU programs, you know, in the state at the time. They kind of, you know, the new kid in Columbus that, you know, was tall and, you know, 15 U team that needed them and was able to play my summers with them.
How did you balance playing, whether it was AAU, whether it was pickup basketball, with getting in the gym by yourself and working out? Because you were probably just on the cusp of sort of the training revolution of guys having trainers and that kind of thing. But I'm guessing that you were probably still working out more on your own. Or just tell me a little bit about how you balanced out playing versus working out and improving your game by yourself in the gym.
I was really focused on the individual, you know, skill development. You know, the AAU was new to me. I didn't know much about it. You know, so I would, you know, talk to my AAU coaches and be like, you know, I got workouts. You know, I wouldn't miss AAU practice to actually get in the gym, you know, by myself. Or at the time I was working out with Ron Lewis's older brother. Ron Lewis played Ohio State, you know, was on our AAU team. But his older brother was doing a lot of skill development down in Columbus at the time and just helping out a lot of young kids, you know, not to the extent that, you know, you have trainers these days with all the, you know, all the gadgets and all that stuff. It was just pretty much getting to the gym and working on your game. So I was excited just to get better because, you know, I wasn't as skilled as a lot of the guys who've been playing for so long. So just being able to get in the gym with them was important for my development as a player.
When did you feel like you started to get a grasp on your body and your skills? When did things really start to come together for you where you felt confident in everything that you were doing? At what point in your high school career did that all start to come together?
I think it was about after my sophomore year. You know, I played freshman basketball my freshman year, was on JV my sophomore year. And, you know, a lot of like the sophomores that were, you know, the guys that had been in the system for a while were playing varsity. So I was still on JV at 6'7", again, still about 150 pounds at the time now. So being able to, you know, see my game develop and my shot get better, and kind of seeing like, man, I'm pretty good at this. You know, I think that was a turning point in my eyes of like, hey, I think I'm able to turn this into a profession and hopefully, you know, get a free education as well.
When did you start to get your first contacts from college coaches? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think it was that summer too as well. So after that, between my junior and my sophomore, my junior season, I started getting, you know, low major Division I interest and, you know, Division II teams, you know, calling me, just asking me, you know, to come to elite camp or just come on campus for unofficials. And just, you know, that was pretty cool just to see that, you know, people were excited about me as a basketball player, no matter the level. You know, I wasn't really caught up on the level at that age because, you know, I never had, you know, anybody that was interested in me and would tell me, you know, you can come here and play basketball and, you know, for free. So I get free education out of it. So I think that was at that point, I think I decided, you know, that's a great time for me to keep developing and just seeing what, you know, what schools are interested in me.
What role did your dad play in that recruiting process?
Well, my dad was influential. Just not he was a basketball player. Like he played, you know, Division III basketball, but he was a lot better baseball player, obviously. But he's a sports guy. You know, he played basketball. He wasn't very good. He was more of a high flyer, so he's kind of opposite. I could shoot, and he could jump out the gym. So I didn't get those genes from him. But he was a huge sports guy. You know, at the time, my dad was working as a banker for Chase. He's a pastor, but at that time he was a banker, and he was working, you know, until about 6, you know, 9 to 5, you know, every day. And he would get home and, you know, take me to the gym, you know, rebound for me, try to teach me a hook shot. That was his favorite thing. He says unstoppable shot. So he, till this day, I don't think I have the hook shot quite the way he has it. But he was able to really, you know, just keep me focused on it. He's like, look, if you're going to do it, you know, do it with everything you got. He never really pressured me into it. So that was like, I guess the good part about it. You know, he knew sports built, you know, character. But he wasn't, you know, in the sense of like, hey, this is the NBA or bust. He's like, look, if you love it, you know, do your hardest, and when the chips will fall where they may.
Yeah, that's sometimes a tough needle to thread, right? I'm sure as a coach, you've experienced all different types of parents with the players that you've been able to work with. And we know that you have parents that kind of take the track that your dad has. And then we have some others that are hugely involved in maybe ways that aren't always positive for their kids. And so I think it's always interesting to talk to somebody and think about how their parent reacted and did the things with them to help their kids to be able to have success. And it sounds like your dad was able to do it right and kind of steer you in the right direction and help you and give you the kind of advice that made you have a more successful career. When you think back to that high school career, what's your favorite memory of high school basketball?
Oh, man. My favorite memory of high school basketball, I would say, you know, probably making it to the districts. We played against Brookhaven in my senior year, which was a really talented team. Like, so they had Ron Lewis, who was at Ohio State, Raheem Moss, who actually played at Bowling Green. Then he played at Cleveland State as well. So, yeah, he was a Cleveland State alum. Andrew Lavender, who was a great point guard, you know, played at Oklahoma, played at Xavier, was All-American. Brandon Faust, Jamel Cornley. They had probably 7 Division I guys in that team at the time. And, you know, Gahanna wasn't what they are, you know, now. You know, when I was playing at Gahanna, you know, we didn't have a ton of Division I guys coming through, our let alone college guys coming through the program every year. Now they're doing a great job of you know, getting kids in that school system and developing them. But for us to get there, make it to that level, and it was a really close game, and that was a team that, you know, I think they would end up going and winning states, or maybe they lost in the finals. But that was a team that was supremely talented. And you know, we had a lot of people in the city that said we couldn't even, you know, we couldn't even be in the gym with them at that time. So that was just a fun experience for me as a player, you know, just going into college that next year.
Talk a little bit about that recruiting process. How do you end up at Penn State? What was that like as you were being recruited? What did you base your decision on? Just walk us through your process for making that decision.
Like I said before, I had a lot of interest from a lot of lower level schools, you know, my sophomore, junior year. And, you know, a lot of teams that were, you know, telling me a lot of great things, like, you know, you come in to start, you'd come in, you know, and be the man. And, you know, I had higher level teams that were telling me, hey, you're going to come in, you got the red shirt, you know, you're 6'11", which are 185 pounds, you know, our bigs here are 250, you know, they're rock solid. So, here in the red shirt, I knew myself personally, that I wanted to play as a freshman. I was like, man, I just want to play, you know, I want an opportunity, not even to play. I just wanted someone to tell me, hey, look, you have an opportunity. You know, if I had a red shirt when I got there, so be it. But a lot of the higher level schools were telling me, you know, we want to offer you a scholarship, but we want to red shirt you. And the lower level schools were telling me I was going to start. And I wanted a good balance of, you know, of playing high major basketball, get some talented bigs and taking my game to the next level. But at the same point in time, I didn't want to have to sit out that first year. So when Penn State and Coach Jerry Dunn came in, and he really meshed well on an in-home visit with my parents, and they kept recruiting me heavily that summer. They were at every game. I mean, they didn't miss a game the whole summer. So to see how excited they were about me, I did, you know, it sparked me just being excited about them as well. And that's one big thing that their staff told me. And I carry that to this day as a coach myself, is look, we want to be excited about you as you are about us. We don't want it to be one way or the other. We don't want you being so excited and we're kind of like, we'll take you, you know. and because I was a North Carolina fan. I mean, I'm a Michael Jordan. I mean,
all right, so you and me are, Rob, on the same page, man, because I was a Carolina guy growing up, and I didn't get to the level that you ended up being able to play at. but I had these, and I was a little bit before you. So when I was coming through, like, I had no idea what recruiting was all about. My high school coach had never had anybody that was kind of on my level. My parents really didn't have any idea. I didn't have any idea. There was no internet to really do research. So I still thought, even going into my senior year, I'm like, I'm just still waiting around for North Carolina to call me, for Ohio State to call me. And obviously those calls never came. But yeah, I could definitely relate to, you know, thinking, hey, if Carolina would have called me, I'd have been there in a second. Let's put it that way.
No, definitely. I told my dad that. I said, I'm going to go to North Carolina. He said, how many times have they called you? I was like, well, I got a couple letters. He's like, how many times have they talked to those guys? Like, none. He's like, well, you're not going to North Carolina. What are you talking about?
That's funny. It's good stuff, though. It's amazing as a kid. And I think, I don't know if it happens as frequently anymore, but certainly you go back in time, and I think there was a lot less understanding of the levels that kids could play at, because there just wasn't the information that's available now. Now you obviously, if you're a kid, you can get on social media, or you're a coach. I mean, it's just, there's so much more information out there. People can educate themselves so much better about the process and kind of know where they're at. And then there's people that can help them, whether it's parents or AAU coaches or high school coaches, that are much more informed than they were back, whatever, 30 some odd years ago when I was going through this process. So it's definitely, in that respect, it's taken a turn for the better. Just people, I think, are more informed about what the whole process is all about.
No, definitely. They definitely are.
All right. So what's the adjustment like for you when you get to Penn State? Obviously, you're a tall, skinny guy. You go in there. What's it like stepping out on the floor with the college guys for the first time?
Oh, it was intense. I mean, I graduated on my birthday, which is June 6th. Graduated June 6th, and I actually left to go to campus June 7th for summer school. And, you know, coming from being, you know, a good player in the high school realm, and, you know, every freshman comes in, you know, expecting one thing, like, all right, I'm going to go in and be able to, you know, do my thing. And that first day on campus, just being in the weight room alone, you know, I didn't lift any weights. I was just, you know, I was tall. I was good at basketball, and I thought that was it. So, you know, I kind of stayed away from the weight room. And that first day in the weight room, you know, this was it was a whirlwind, you know, the loud music, guys yelling at you, you know, weights hitting the ground. It was a shock to me personally. But, you know, that summer was great for me. I was able to put on about 25 pounds. I was able to go against a lot of upperclassmen that summer, just in open gyms and workouts. And it was good to get there early and before, you know, fall started and the guys getting, you know, and students got on campus. But for my development, I really needed that summer. And that was, you know, a big reason why I was able to, you know, start as a freshman.
Do you use those experiences and share them with the players that you recruit and the players that you brought in and worked with over the years as a college coach?
Oh, definitely. I had a lot of our guys in the office today, and I'm just talking to them. And I'm like, look, guys, I've been where you've been at. You know, that's one thing that I use in the whole – with recruiting and coaching in general. Is like, look, guys, I played college basketball. So everything you guys are experiencing or will experience, you know, I've had to deal with it. So having me as a sounding board, but also understanding that I'm not going to be sympathetic sometimes with this, some of this stuff, because I'm going to be like, hey, I had to deal with that. I had to deal with it. I had to deal with the cafeteria food. I had to deal with, you know, the dorm life. I had to deal with, you know, study halls and, you know, and having an exam and having a cram and then still having to get the weights. It's just, it goes with the territory, right? So I think the guys respect that. And that's one of the big reasons why they respond so well, you know, on the court to myself as well.
So when you get to school, what are you thinking in terms of career goals at that point when you first get to school?
I mean, I wanted to major in marine biology. My first goal was I wanted to major in marine biology. I'm telling my academic advisor I want to be a marine biologist after I get done playing basketball. And they were like, well, we don't have any body of water near us, so we don't have that as a major. So if you wanted that major, you should have went somewhere on some water. So
that's funny.
That was different. But then I actually was like, you know, I want to make the NBA like everyone, you know, like everyone who's a basketball player. They, you know, that's the ultimate goal, is to make it to the NBA. But I also knew that the ball was going to stop bouncing sometime. I knew I wasn't going to just play basketball my entire life. So definitely, you know, looked into, actually my first year, I looked into being either a sports agent. I actually went to pre-med for a semester, but you know, the freshman, you don't hit any of those classes. You might get a lab. You get a lot of electives and you get a lab. And I think I had a lab and I was like, man, I got this lab. And like, how many more labs I want to have? And they were like, yeah, a lot of these labs will be at night. So you're going to leave practice. And I was like, well, let's talk about something different. So, actually went into labor industrial relations, wanted to be a sports agent because I was like, you know what? I want to be around the game of basketball. You know, coaching wasn't, you know, what I was like, oh, you know, some guys are like, man, I'm going to coach. I'm going to play, and I'm going to coach. And that wasn't me. You know, I wanted to be around the game, but I didn't really think about the coaching aspect till later on.
Yeah, it's so interesting. The number of people that we've talked to on the podcast, they either fall into one of those two camps. They're either somebody who, when they were 8 years old, they were drawing up plays on a napkin while they were sitting there eating breakfast, and they knew they were going to be a coach even though they were still a player. And then guys like yourself, who you're focused on being a player, you maybe know you want to be involved in the game, but coaching really isn't getting on your radar at that point because you're still thinking of yourself as a player. So tell us a little bit about the decision to leave Penn State and transfer to West Virginia. What prompted the transfer, and then what do you feel like you got out of it? Why did it work out so well for you?
Well, you know, I came in at Penn State under Coach Jerry Dunn, and after my freshman year, he was let go. So we had a good freshman class. We had three freshmen that were starting at our first year, and that's back when the Big Ten was, you know, and Big Ten's really good now. But, I mean, that's when it first started getting really, really good with those Illinois teams with D. Brown and Luther Head and Deron Williams and, you know, Devin Harris is at Wisconsin. So you had so many, you know, really talented guys that we don't have NBA careers that were in the Big Ten at the time. So we were excited to be a young group of guys coming through the Big Ten. And once Coach Dunn got let go, you know, a couple of guys were like, you know, I came here for him, and they ended up transferring at, you know, after the first semester, our sophomore year. So, you know, I stayed there my second season with Coach DeCellis, through the end of the year, and was starting, and, you know, was playing, and, you know, was happy. But at the same point in time, when you see a new staff, sometimes you look at it as if, you know, they didn't recruit me, you know, I don't know, this is the place I need to be at. And I kind of expressed those feelings to them. So decided to transfer. And once I transferred, Coach Dunn, actually, who recruited me to Penn State, was an assistant at West Virginia. And he knew my style. He knew I was a big, they like to stretch the floor. There was more of a skill guy, high IQ, can pass it, you know, wasn't, you know, that running, jumping, just dunking, you know, all that type of stuff. You know, I use my skill set to my advantage. He was like, look, you know, I'm at West Virginia here. We got a good program. We're trying to build it up. You know, we're just coming off a first round NIT loss. But I think we got some good things, and I think you would fit in well with Coach Beilein. So went down there for a visit, and just fell in love with Morgantown, fell in love with the staff. Coach Beilein was awesome. The team was down there. The guys were great, you know, on the visit, and it just really felt like home for me when I went for that visit.
What was it like that year you had to sit out? Because I know when I was at Kent, we had a guy or two that transferred in that had to sit out. And those are tough years for guys when you're practicing, you're having to go through everything that everybody else has to go through and all the challenges that you talked about earlier, and then you don't get to play come game time, which obviously is the reward. It's the carrot at the end of the stick. So what was that year like for you after you transferred, just going through and practicing, knowing that you weren't going to ever get to play in a game that season?
It was tough. It was tough. I knew myself, and that's kind of why I didn't want to redshirt as a freshman, is because I knew if I didn't have that carrot and stick, I could see myself being lazy as a player. So that redshirt season, you know, I was trying my best to, you know, push those starters. But at the same point in time, I was, you know, a little down about not getting that opportunity to play. You know, the great thing about it is that we were really good that year. So that was the year, you know, that was the first year of, you know, where, you know, Kevin Pisnoggle, you know, goes off and he becomes a household name. So we become that team that, you know, I think we lost in the Big East Finals that year to the baby Syracuse, but we became, like, you know, kind of a Cinderella story of sorts, and we went to the Elite Eight. So that was when we, you know, we beat Wake Forest at the Wolstein Center. Actually, it was called the Combo back then, but that's back when Chris Paul and those guys lost, and I think it was double overtime to us at the Combo Center here in Cleveland. So it was bittersweet because, you know, I was excited to be a part of the team. But at the same point in time, I wanted to be out on the floor. But our team, I think the staff and the team was so closely knit that they didn't allow me to, you know, get inside my own head. They kept me involved. They kept me like, look, man, you got to give it to us every day in practice. You got to come. you got to be the biggest cheerleader on the bench. And I think, you know, I was probably the biggest cheerleader you could ever see at 6'11", with wearing a two baggy suit on the end of the bench, just waving a towel for that season.
A little bit of a different style, right? Fashion wise, back in the day.
Oh man, a lot of buttons on those suits.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm trying to think where I saw this, but sometime within probably the last month or so, I saw there was a photo of all the draft picks the year LeBron got picked. So what was that, 2004? And I mean, the suits are hysterical, man. Everybody's like, they're giant. The pants are all, you know, just there's like a yard of fabric down by the shoes. It's amazing how the styles how styles change. It's crazy. I had a coach once recently that said, you know, it used to be that you'd have, you know, the 5'8 kid would ask you for the extra large shorts, and now it's the 6'8 kid asking you for the, you know, the extra small jersey. You know, everybody wants the small tight stuff. It's just, it's crazy how things kind of go full circle. I remember when I went to Kent my first year, we had shorts that they had belts on them, Rob, my first year.
Oh,
and,
man.
And so when I was a freshman, I didn't play a whole lot. So I sat on the bench in these tiny short shorts with a belt. That was like the most uncomfortable thing I've ever experienced. And then by the time I'm a senior, you know, you got the shorts that are hanging down way past your knees with like the 14-inch inseam or whatever it was. It's just crazy how things have changed. It's amazing.
It's wild. It's wild.
It's amazing. All right. Well, so I asked you for your high school highlight. What's your college highlight?
Oh man, probably senior year. You know, senior year, I think we weren't slated to be very good. You know, I think our junior year we went to the Sweet 16 and we lost to LaMarcus Aldridge in Texas on a buzzer beater. So that was tough, and we lost a lot of those seniors. You know, with Pisnoggle, Mike Ganzi, you know, Joe Herbert, you know, JD Collins. They were a team that the guys had been there for 4 years, and they had turned, you know, Western into a household name. So going to my senior year, we were kind of in a rebuilding stage, most would think. So, you know, we brought in a lot of freshmen with Deshaun Butler, you know, Joe Mazzulla, and to be able to win an NIT championship, you know, we felt slighted by not making that tournament, you know, that tournament team. We actually, to this day, we have a group chat called the 65th placed 2007 NCAA team. Because back then, I guess there were 64 teams back then.
That's awesome.
So we're the 65th placed team. But we ended up, you know, getting the first, you know, getting the number one seed in the NIT. And, you know, we went back to the Garden because the Big East tournament was in the Garden. And our whole thing was, let's get back to the Garden. And Coach Beilein did a great job of keeping us focused because, you know, not a lot of guys are that excited, that love it about playing at NIT.
Absolutely. That could certainly go either way, right? I mean, you could either do what you guys did, which is get excited about it, or you could have a team goes the other way, like, man, we should have been in, get bitter, and then you end up losing early because you're just not as into it as you could have been. We've seen teams obviously do that.
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. And that's our thing. We were going to miss spring break. We said, guys, we're going to miss spring break anyways because we're going to do our first two round games are during spring break. We're like, man, we might as well win this whole thing. If we're going to be in it and we're going to miss spring break and we're going to do all this, like, we got to go ahead and win it. So to go out there and, you know, in my college career with the championship, you know, and then at that point in time, there wasn't a CBI or a CIT. And so, you know, Coach Beilein's biggest saying was like, look, only two teams are going to end this year on a win. You know, the NCAA champion and us, you know, NIT champion. So you guys got to be focused on that. Now, one thing that Joe Mazzulla said, and it was kind of funny, was like, he's like, well, what about those teams that don't make the conference tournament that won the last game? He kind of mows in the breath. And so this day, we talk about that all the time. He's like, well, there's a couple of teams that end on a win because they didn't make the conference tournament, but they won the last game. But it was just great to cut down on that. Our t-shirts at the time were misspelled, so that's kind of like the cool thing that always pops up on ESPN. They spelled West Virginia without the last I, so they were like, yes, it's a mishap on all those things. But definitely was a great experience for myself and my teammates.
Very cool. All right, so you get done, you graduate. What's the plan from there? Obviously, you want to continue to play. You get an opportunity to play overseas. Just talk a little bit about the professional experience transitioning from being a college basketball to being a professional player, what that was like for you. And then I always want to ask and find out what your best European basketball story is, one that's clean that you can share on the podcast.
Oh, no, definitely. Well, you know, when I graduated, you know, again, wanted to be in the NBA, you know, averaged 5 points, five rebounds. I was a starter, you know, we were top 25, but, you know, 5 points, five rebounds, and a 6'11 guy who's not a big time dunker. I mean, I missed my calling. I think I was probably 12 years too early. I think if I would have been able to be a skilled shooting, you know, big guy, you know, back then it was like get in the post. They were, you know, the nonstop guys were just like, oh, why is that 6'11 guy shooting jump shots and threes? And now it's like, you better be able to shoot jump shots and threes. But
absolutely.
I think just, you know, so once I graduated, talked to a couple of agents, wanted to make it to the NBA, end up getting drafted by the Iowa Energy with Coach Nick Nurse. So Nick Nurse was my first coach in the D League at the time. Now it's the G League, but was out there in Iowa. Actually just saw Coach Nurse this past week. Coach Gates was speaking at a clinic and Coach Nurse was there. He's like, we drafted you in the second round. I remember you, because I was like, you probably don't remember me at all.
That's funny.
Because I barely played for the 3 months they had me before a guy got sent down from the Bulls and took my spot. So I kind of went overseas after that and spent three seasons, played pretty much anywhere and everywhere you can play. I was a mercenary. You know, I went to Portugal, Austria, South Korea, Uruguay, Dominican Republic. Played in Puerto Rico, played in Morocco. I mean, I was I was any and everywhere in the summer times, just, you know, trying to make, you know, those tax-free dollars at the time. And I think it was a great experience. You know, I got to experience a lot of different cultures. As far as a crazy story, I'll give you one. My first year, I'm in Portugal, and, you know, I don't know much about, you know, I don't know much about the country. Don't know much about grocery shopping just in general. You know, I'm, even in college, I'm grocery shopping for pizza rolls and bread and peanut butter and jelly. That's about it. So now, you know, now I'm in a supermarket that's, you know, nothing's in English. You know, there's not and I'm walking down the aisle and I'm trying to find sugar. I want to make cookies. So I'm like, man, you know what? I miss chocolate cookies. My dad sent me a recipe that he had that was really good. So I'm like, I want to make chocolate. I miss home. I want to make chocolate chip cookies. So I'm walking down the aisle and there's all these just bags of just like, you know, flour. You know, I mean, what I'm thinking is flour. What I'm thinking is sugar. What I'm thinking is, you know, bake. So I'm kind of like guessing. Like I kind of put two and two together. Like Arm & Hammer or bacon. Like they have bacon soda. Like it's bacon soda. I can tell Arm & Hammer. Okay. Cool, like flour. I can see the symbol of a flour on that. I can do all these things. And then I get to what I think is sugar and I buy this bag of just, you know, what I think is sugar, you know, pay my money, go home, make these cookies. They come out looking good, smelling good. And I take a bite of the cookie and it was salt. I had took salt.
Oh man. Because
I didn't know. And I had made a salt. I had made a salt cookie. I had made a cookie that was made completely out of salt. So after that, I learned what the Portuguese word was for sugar so that I could know that going forward. But, it definitely was an experience learning how to cook and I cut my own hair and all and everything for myself while I was overseas.
And having to navigate all that for the first time, definitely, and having to do it in a foreign country and language barriers and all that stuff. That's a good story. I like that one. What place that you played was your favorite? What was your favorite just location that you liked the best?
I mean, I'm American through and through, so I love everything that America's about. So any place that had, you know, just the American style food, but South Korea probably was the best because they had a TGI Fridays and a Krispy Kreme donuts right down the street from my apartment. So I was able to see a hot sign and grab a hot donut and go to TGI Fridays and get some mozzarella sticks. So that's probably one of my favorite. Plus, I probably made the most money there too. So it's always good when you're making the most money. That's
absolutely. Then you can buy as many mozzarella sticks as you want, right?
There you go. There you go.
That's all good. That's all good. All right. So when does coaching get on your radar?
So my last year, I'm playing in Morocco at the time. I actually go for a dunk and I get undercut and I hurt my back. So I go back. They say, you know, I have a herniated disc. You know, I could get surgery or I could rehab it. They were like, surgery's not really going to help per se. It may not, but rehab could help a lot. So actually contacted Coach Huggins and, you know, I spent my summers, you know, kind of in New York City and in Morgantown just working out with people. So, you know, built that great relationship up with Hugs when he came in and took over Coach Beeline. And he said, well, look, you know, come back and be a GA, use our facilities to train and also to, you know, get your rehab together, because the trainer at the time, you know, Doc Randy Matter is still there to this day, but he was great. And he was like, look, you can come down here and get better with us. So I was down there for that summer. I mean, for that year, just kind of, you know, helping out with the bigs, you know, doing what I need to do as a grad assistant, taking my master courses. And towards the end of the season, you know, Hugs is like, well, what's the next step? And I said, well, I'm going back overseas. You know, I got a couple of contracts on the table. I'm going to go ahead and do it again. And he said, well, how much are you going to make? And I think at that time I was probably going to make $8,000 a month or something like that, about $80,000. And he was like, look, if you're not making six figures as an overseas player by year four, he's like, you're just going to be sitting around nickel and diamond for the next several years. And when you get done, your body breaks down, you're going to want to do something. And you're going to probably want to coach because you've been doing a great job with our guys here. They really respond well to you. I see how you're a mentor to them. You need to get into it now. And I was like, well, you know, I've never really thought about coaching as much, but I do. I love being around these guys and they're responding well to me. And he's like, look, you need to get into coaching. He's like, you don't want to be 30, 35 years old asking me for a job. And I'm not going to be able to give you one because you don't have any experience. So I was like, well, all right. So I'm like, I'll think about it. So probably an hour later, he calls me and says, I got a job for you. I was like, what? I was like, here? And he's like, no. I got a job for you at Glenville State. And I said, Glenville State? I said, Hugs, what is that? And he said, it's a Division II school. It's about an hour and a half south of here in Morgantown. He's like, it's in a small town, one stoplight, and a CVS. He's like, and you're going to take this job. And I said, Well, let me come and talk to you. So I went in there, talked to him, you know, went in his office, and he's like, you got to take it. You know, I think you want to get in this coaching thing. You got to learn. You got to learn how to recruit. You got to see if you love it. You got to see if you love it, because it's going to be long hours and you're not going to make any money. So went home, prayed about it, called my parents. And, you know, the next day went down and visited with Coach Dye, who was the head coach at the time, and accepted a position. And he was right. It had one stoplight. I mean, it was a CVS, and the nearest Walmart was about an hour away. So it was a culture shock for me, going from being a high major basketball player, pro basketball player, to living in a studio apartment, and, you know, trying to plan my Walmart trips around going to the movies in the mall because it's so far away.
All right. So I have two questions related to that. One, first of all, was it hard to put the ball down? Was that difficult? Was it easier than you thought once you did it? How did you react to no longer thinking of yourself as a player?
It was tough. It was tough. I mean, yeah, to this day, I love playing basketball. I mean, I still play one-on-one against our guys. I still, you know, find ways to play, you know, pick up basketball around the city of Cleveland whenever I can, you know, and it's because it's in my blood, you know, it's kind of my stress relief. So to put it down was tough. I think those first couple of years as a coach, you still are in that player mindset of, you could do it. Like, well, I can do this. Why aren't you guys able to do this? So you're just getting, you get frustrated a little bit your first couple of years of coming off being a player, because you think about yourself as a player and what you could do. And you got to separate that from what your players can do. Because a lot of times, you know, and especially that, you know, at the Division II level, those guys weren't as in tune with, you know, the stuff that I had to go through for, you know, 20 plus years of playing basketball. So it was tough at first. But I think, you know, toward that second year, it was easier because I saw the reward of those guys really getting better, and those guys really being thankful for, you know, having me be a part of the staff and having me as somebody they can go to when, you know, they were going through the same issues I went through as a player.
Are you tired of slipping and sliding on the court and sticky sheets just aren't giving you grip? Grip Spritz solves this problem without having to lick your hand to clean your shoes. Grip Spritz is used by countless AAU, high school and college programs, semi-pro teams, as well as NCAA athletes and G League players. Unlike other products, Grip Spritz has solutions for individual players, not just entire teams. We've used Grip Spritz at our Head Start basketball camps, and players love it. To keep you and your team from slipping and sliding, visit gripspritz.net to learn more. What were some of the challenges of going from being obviously in the Big Ten, then you're at West Virginia, then you're playing overseas as a pro, as you mentioned, and now you're going to a Division II school? What were some of the challenges in terms of maybe resources or just things that were different from the way you had always kind of seen them done to now how you have to do them at the Division II level?
I mean, you know, obviously, you know, when you're at Penn State, you're at West Virginia, you're at two, you know, premier programs in the country that have unlimited resources. You know, you have unlimited dollars for equipment, for food, housing, anything along those lines. Training staff, you know, there's multiple trainers there, you know, multiple cold tubs, multiple people that are just taking care of your body for you. So you can just walk into the training room and you got guys attaching, you know, stems to your leg and putting ice here, heating packs there. You know, it's a, I don't want to say a pampered lifestyle because you're going through the ringer, but it's a lot of people there that are helping you take care of your body. And then leaving from there to go overseas was difficult because, you know, you're making money and you're a pro, but a lot of these guys don't understand when they get to that pro level is you're doing a lot of stuff on your own. You know, I had to learn to tape my own ankles. You know, I had to learn to tape my own ankles as a player because our trainer was a part-time guy who worked at a cafe, you know, and he would come in and, you know, and help, but it wasn't to the level that you have at the, you know, the Big East, Big Ten, back then high major type basketball. And then going to Division II as a coach and seeing, and I credit that to my success as a coach to now, because I saw kind of everything that goes in behind the scenes. You know, I was sweeping the floor, I was washing jerseys, you know, I'm ordering the food, I'm ordering the pizzas and the Subway for after the game, I'm driving a van, I'm doing every little thing that you, as a player, you never see, right? You never see that. And to be at that level, at the Division II level, and have to cut your teeth with that type of situation was just incredible, because I feel like there's no job but anything now. So like if there's anything that ever needs to get done, I'm never, you know, one to be like, oh, okay, somebody else can handle that. Like, hey man, you need somebody to paint a wall. I'll go out there and paint a wall.
That's I already did it, right?
I did it. Yes, exactly.
All right. So obviously that's one of the things that I hear a lot from guys that start out at lower levels that, you know, clearly the staff is smaller. So you end up getting this baptism by fire of seeing the opportunities to do all the different things that you just talked about. You get to touch every single aspect of the program. So in that first 2-year stint at Glenville, what did you really love about coaching? What were some of the parts that you were like, man, this is really, I can see myself doing this for the rest of my career because I love this aspect of coaching? What jumped out at you?
Just the thankfulness of the players, especially the guys that you recruit. I mean, I remember my first recruit, Jamel Morris. He came in and, you know, wasn't highly recruited, actually played in my high school. But, you know, I think he had maybe one Division II offer. There was maybe a half a scholarship. So he came in and, you know, worked out for our staff. And we ended up offering him a scholarship. And he was an all-freshman guy. And, now he's playing pro ball. He's just got married. He's got a daughter. I mean, he got a daughter now. He's got a son now. And it was just cool during his freshman season for him to come in my office and just constantly be, you know, wanting to watch film, you know, asking me for advice, you know, saying, you know, coach, I'm struggling with this. Like, what do you think about that? And to see in his eyes just how in tune he was with what I was saying and when the advice I was giving him, when he was acting on it and to see success happen for him and for him to just be thankful about that situation was just incredible. You know, I think it's just super rewarding when you have a kid who says, you know, coach, you affected my life in ways that you don't understand. Like, and that's why I got into it. You know, it's always great to win and all those good things, but when someone can say, hey, like, you really helped me out with this situation, I think that was the most important part for me and still is to this day.
Yeah, that's huge. When you think about the impact that you have as a coach, and I always think back to the impact that coaches had on me as a player and the things that they may have said to me during my career at various points that I'm sure that a lot of the coaches don't even remember the things that, you know, that I remember that are important to me. They probably don't even remember saying them to me. And I think that's probably a little bit of what you're describing, where here's this kid that you bring in as a recruit and he tells you, hey, you're having an impact on me in ways that you don't even recognize. And I think that's something that all coaches, when we stop and think about it, it's really what it's all about, is trying to have that impact. And a lot of times that impact, sure, it's measured, as you said, in wins and losses, in the immediacy of what we're doing in the season. And we can see a kid get better with their basketball skills. But ultimately, it's the fact that you're still connected to him and that, you know that he just, you know, had a kid and he just got married and he's playing and he still reaches out to you. And to me, that those kinds of relationships are really what coaching ends up ultimately being about, because the wins and losses kind of fade away. And yeah, we have some things that we remember from our careers as players, but for the most part, you remember more about the relationships that you built, whether that's with your coaching staff or with your teammates, or, you know, you were mentioning the inside jokes you guys have with the text threads and that stuff. Like, that to me is really what it's all about. And I think as a coaching staff, part of your job is to be able to make those relationships happen. And that's really, I think, where coaches can have the greatest impact. After you get done at Glenville State, you get an opportunity to go to James Madison. Talk a little bit about how that opportunity came to pass.
Well, being at Glenville was great. You know, we had some good teams. We were in the, you know, doing a great trajectory of winning, and just wanted to get back to Division I level. I wanted some Division I experience in the aspect of it. And I wanted to see how things were ran from a budgetary standpoint. You know, I did a lot of recruiting at Glenville, but I wasn't involved with all the budgets and the scheduling and all that. It was more of just the development of the players and recruiting. So wanted to take a step back and, you know, obviously get Division I experience, but wanted to be able to see how a team's ran behind the scenes from that aspect of Division I level. And so when there's ops, was able to learn how to schedule everything. I mean, from games to travel arrangements to, you know, but how to balance a budget of a program, and it was huge. You know, being in Harrisonburg, they were coming off an NCAA tournament run. Harrisonburg was a beautiful city. of great people at James Madison. You know, they had a premier football program at the time. So wanted to be, you know, around that, wanted to be around that and see what that experience was like. And it was great for my career as well.
So then you get an opportunity fairly quickly and early in your career to move on as a head coach. How does that experience come to you? How do you get that opportunity? Maybe talk a little bit about the interview process and then what it was like to transition from being an assistant to being a head coach.
Oh man, I don't know how much time we have left, but it was, it happened pretty quickly. You know, being a director of operations, you know, I enjoyed my experience, but wanted to get back on the court. You know, obviously you don't have any on-court responsibility as an ops person. So, definitely wanted to get back on the court. So I was looking at some Division I assistant positions, and being from Columbus, knew about Urbana, knew that they had just went Division II. Knew that they weren't very good. So, you know, I knew my first head coaching position was going to be with a team that wasn't very good. I wasn't going to, you know, just walk into, you know, a premier program in the country. So they had actually lost every game the season before. So I think they were 0-30, 0-29. They were about 5 games from the country's longest ever losing streak. So they let that staff go and was able to, you know, get an interview just because I think it just the people, you know, this business is a lot about networking. My AD when I was at Glenville, Janet Bailey, knew the AD at Urbana. So, you know, I contacted Coach Bailey and I, you know, I asked her, could she, you know, reach out to the Urbana AD and see, you know, did they have anybody in mind? And he said, you know, was open. He was willing to sit down and talk with me. So gave him a call, you know, kind of gave him my backstory, just being from Central Ohio. Knowing the area, recruited the area pretty heavily at the Division II level already. I had Division II experience, but also, you know, I've been a Division I player. So I wanted to run my program as close to Division I program as possible. And I was young and energetic. You know, I was 29 years old going into being a head coach. So I was just excited. I was willing to, you know, I wanted to put the hours in. I wanted to make the program something special. So, you know, Doug at the time, the AD, he was like, look, come on campus, went on campus, had on campus interview with their board, sat down, had my presentation, went around, talked with the president, sat down with them. And, you know, they were having some financial problems at the time. So they were in the process of actually getting purchased by Franklin University out of Columbus. So they were kind of changing over a little bit in administration, but they were like, look, we want you to be the guy, you know, we got to run it by, you know, our new administration, but we think this will be, you know, a great fit for us because we want to have, you know, a young, energetic head coach who's excited about being here, who sees something special in it. And, you know, I think it was awesome. It was an awesome experience. You know, we took our lumps that first year and we didn't break the record. So that was good. I made sure that I was like, man, we gotta make sure we win these first 5 games. We actually won my second game as a head coach. I'm actually staring at the basketball right now. So it was a pretty cool experience to get my first win as a head coach. And I think my first time out, I called, we were playing at IUP, University of Pennsylvania, and I called a timeout probably, you know, 2 minutes of the game. They had made a run, and I called a timeout, and it was an unreal feeling to go in there and call a timeout. You know, you say all these things as an assistant, you're like, what you would do different. And I actually had to call my head coach after the game, like, look, I apologize for everything I've ever said to you about you do things this way, because it is a tough position to be in as a head coach. It's definitely, you know, a great position. But I think that a lot of assistants don't understand how tough it is to have, you know, every single call rely upon yourself.
Who did you lean on that first year? Like, who did you call when things got tough?
Oh, I mean, I probably blew Hugs and Beeline's phone up every day. I mean, I was calling those two nonstop. I mean, we were trying to run a lot of Coach Beeline's offense. You know, so I was just calling and picking his brain about a lot of stuff that we ran when I was in school. But also just asking him about, you know, this off the court issues that you have with your players and how you handle those things, because, you know, you always say you're going to do things one way and you got to, you know, but you got to understand, you got to have what you're going to, you know, exactly what you're putting in place for anything, whether it was an issue with a kid missing a class or anything, or being late for the bus. So just having him and Hugs as a sounding board, you know, Hugs was great for me because, you know, he was like, look, you're a head coach now. They can never take that away from you. But you got to understand that, you know, the buck stops with you. There's going to be nobody to blame for any of these losses. So you're going to be the guy that's going to experience that. And you don't really understand it until you get in that position as a head coach. you kind of just look at it. But, you know, the players get the credit for the win, rightfully so. And as a head coach, you're going to get the blame for the losses. But it goes with the territory. So those guys definitely were great sounding boards for me, though.
What was the best part of being the head coach and running your own program compared to your prior experience as an assistant? What was just something that stands out to you as, man, I really love this aspect of it that I didn't get to do as an assistant, but now as a head coach, I get to do?
I mean, there was a lot. I mean, I loved being a head coach. It was stressful. I lost my hair when I was a head coach. I credit being a head coach is why I don't have any hair on my head. But being able to implement your offense, being able to, you know, to sign the kids you want to sign, you know, there's no convincing any, you're not convincing anybody of anything. You know, you convince yourself. That's about it. So you're able to make those decisions, you know, as stressful as they may be able to, you know, I want to run this offensively. This is what we're going to run. That's just a great feeling to be able to, I want to recruit this kid. I think this kid is going to be special for us. I mean, it was a phenomenal experience, like I said, and it's just something that, you know, you always want to have happen, and for it to happen so quickly for me and to be, you know, at a place where, you know, there was pressure, because there's always pressure with the head coach. But also, you know, at the Division II level, you don't have as many eyes on you. So I was able to learn. I was able to learn a lot about, you know, how to delegate tasks. I probably wore myself too thin, because I didn't understand everything that went into being a head coach, from, you know, the engagements you have, where you're talking to, you know, a radio show, then you got to go meet a booster, and then you got to go talk to a parent, and you're just like spreading yourself so thin, and also trying to schedule, you know, your practice and trying to do all those things. And I think I learned over those 3 years to kind of like let your assistants do a lot of coaching. And one thing that Coach Gates says now is he does less coaching now as a head coach than he did as an assistant. And I think that's definitely something that I take with myself.
When did you start to develop your philosophy as a coach in terms of the way you wanted to run your program, the types of offenses and defenses that you wanted to run? Obviously, part of it is dictated by your personnel, but just when did you feel like you had a grasp on how you wanted to coach, if that question makes sense?
Oh, I think it started as a grad assistant, I think. Yeah, I want to say, you know, even as a player, you know, I always thought we had an older staff and our staff was great. But, you know, our assistants and Coach B, they were all older guys. They were guys that were in their, you know, late 50s, you know, early 60s. And they were like, so we didn't, as players, we couldn't go to them with a lot of our issues, because in our minds, we felt as if they, you know, sometimes they didn't understand where we were coming from, right? So you, as a player, you look at, I mean, my guys look at me at 37 now, like I'm a dinosaur.
They're
like, coach, you're so old and all that stuff like that. And I'm like, I can still dunk, guys. I'm not that old. But, you know, I wanted to, you know, be a player's coach. I wanted to be someone that they could come to about anything, not just the basketball aspect, because as a player in college, sometimes you feel like it's a business. And I didn't want my guys that I coached to feel like it was a transactional thing that we were going through. I wanted it to be very transformational. I wanted them to be able to come to me about every single issue they had, from girlfriends to academically, to family life at home with their parents. Any of those things was like what I wanted to hang my hat on. I wanted to hang my hat on being high energy with them, because I know that how I felt as a player. I didn't always want to come to practice. I was like, man, we got to practice again today. Man, we got 4 hours in this gym. So I wanted to bring a lot of energy to them. I want to be very, very positive with them, you know, because I felt like, you know, as a player, sometimes you just see the negative things, right? When you get yelled at, you forget about everything else that you're experiencing. So I wanted to be very, very positive with them, and wanted them to be able to come to me, you know, for any type of, you know, off the court situation that they're going through, because they needed that. You know, you need that. You get it from your parents, and that's great, but you've been getting that from your parents for 18 years. You want to see somebody who looks like you, sounds like you, been through those situations, and then you can listen a little bit better. So that was my biggest way of developing my philosophy. I just would just sit there and jot down notes of what I wanted my, you know, my program to look like. You know, I still have that little black book to this day, and I kind of scroll back through it, and it's got, you know, everything from how I want my program to be to how I want my family life to be. And I wasn't even thinking about marriage at the time, but, you know, one of the things on the first page was always make time for your wife and kids. It's because I saw some coaches, you know, you see coaches and you see guys who are like, you know, they're always, you know, just in the office until, you know, and you got those late nights in the office, don't get me wrong, but you almost look at, and they're like, man, you actually have like a 4-year-old son. Like you can't be here until 10 a.m., 10 p.m. every day and be able to experience their life. So on my first page is always, it says it like, it's like probably halfway down that page of just always make time for your wife and kids. So, and that was, like I said, this is before I was even thinking about being married.
As you know, Rob, that's one of the huge challenges out there in the coaching profession. I don't care what level it is. When you think about the amount of time that you guys put in as Division I college assistants and your staff as a total. And then I think about just where high school coaching has gone in the last 15 or 20 years compared to what it would like when you were playing high school basketball or I was playing high school basketball. There wasn't nearly the level of commitment that's required of a high school coach. I always say that like the baseline of what you have to do as a high school coach, the amount of time you have to put in just to be competitive, let alone to stand out now. It's incredible. I don't think the average parent and probably the average, you know, player doesn't necessarily realize the amount of time that their coaching staff's putting in, whether it's at the college level or the high school level. And when you think about your time there at Urbana and managing your staff and helping your assistants to develop and become better coaches, how do you feel like, and this will kind of transition into the next stage of your career, when you start thinking about, you start out as an assistant, you become a head coach, then you're back to being an assistant as you move up to the Division I level at James Madison. How do you feel like though that career arc of going assistant, head coach, back to assistant, how did it make you better as an assistant coach? And how do you think it'll make you better when you get your next head coaching opportunity, whenever that comes?
That's a great question. I mean, it definitely helped me out a ton. This sense of a fact of I knew what I needed from my assistant. I had a great staff with me at Urbana. You know, one of my assistants, Mike Hunter, is the head coach at Lakeland Community College up here in Cleveland now. So, you know, I great guys working for me. They did a great job, and I knew what I needed from them, and they did a good job of kind of giving that to me. So when I was able to go back to be an assistant, I would always kind of talk to the other assistants on the staff, because, you know, as an assistant and you've never been in that seat as a head coach, you will always be like, oh, well, why is he not doing this? Why is he saying this, that? And I'm like, dude, there's a lot of things you guys got to understand are going through his mind right now. You guys are just sitting back like, well, we just do it this way. And you're not thinking about the contingency plans of what's going to happen if he does this. You know, if he does X, and then Y and Z are going to happen. But maybe Y and Z don't happen, but that might happen. So just being able to see how a head coach's mind works, and to go back to be assistant, you have some empathy, you have some type of, you know, you have grace. I think sometimes assistants who've never been there don't have a lot of grace with head coaches, because, you know, they're like, well, why do you do this? And I'm like, dude, you don't understand. You've never been there. So, you know, it's like raising a kid. Like, well, why don't they just do this with a kid? You know, you don't have kids.
Yeah, the kids try, so true.
You're like, well, they just do this. And I'm like, you don't have kids, man. You don't know what this is like. So I compare to that. So being able to, you know, go back to being an assistant and being able to help and head coach and improve their career, because those wins and losses are going to the Wikipedia page. That's what I always say. Like, these aren't going on my Wikipedia page. They're going on there. So it's my job as their assistant, to be, you know, there for them and do what I need to do. You know, whatever level of development with the players, to, you know, anything that needs to be done, I understand that I have to be there to make their job easier, because it's a stressful job being a head coach. And I think just for my next level, you know, whenever I'm blessed to get another head coaching job at whatever level there is, it's even helped me even further, because now being an assistant again, I know what I can require of my assistants, but also what I can trust them with, and being more trustworthy in my staff, and not being able to, you know, as a young head coach, you want to be like mine, you know, I want to run things this way, and I'm going to do it this way, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to take care of this, and I'm going to do this. And I think as a head coach in the future, I'm going to allow my assistants to be more of the focal point in running things and running practices and, you know, take a little bit of a step, a hands-off approach and, you know, interject when I need to interject, but not feeling as if my voice is the voice that needs to be heard at all times, because guys can kind of tune you out at a certain point in time, right? You can be a head coach just talking nonstop during practice and now everything you say doesn't really matter, as opposed to a head coach who allows assistants to coach, allows, you know, that development to happen. And when they chime in and they speak and they're talking, it's like, all right, this is some serious stuff we need to be listening to. So I think that definitely will help me when that time comes.
And that's really hard to do. I mean, it is really hard to take a step back and give something away to somebody else, in this case, your staff. But you think about just even in a business, you're trying to run something and there's things that you want to keep for yourself that you don't want to give away because you just feel like I can do it better. But we talked to so many coaches that have said, I really wasn't successful until I was able to learn how to delegate and be able to trust my staff, to be able to give them things that they were good at, that they were experts in. And then I didn't have to worry about that because I trusted them and I knew they were going to do a great job. And then I could focus over here where my energy was really needed. And I think that's something that it's really difficult to be able to do that. I think it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of self-reflection. And as you said, it takes a lot of trust in your staff. Tell us a little bit about how you end up with Cleveland State back here in Ohio. Just give me the story of how you get to Cleveland State after you have a couple seasons as an assistant at James Madison.
Well, after James Madison, I was actually sitting in the summertime at NCAA Academy out in Phoenix. And I heard about Cleveland State staff getting fired. And I was like, man, like, that's kind of crazy. You know, they get fired this late in the summer. Like, no one's changing jobs this late. Like, you know, it's in July. School starts up in a couple of weeks. You know, the rumblings happen with the coaches on the road. You know, every coach is sitting sideline, you know, watching recruits. And they're like, man, who's going to take that Cleveland State job, man? That's a crazy job, man. They only got like two players, all those guys in the portal. You see Twitter. They had like, it's like 11 names pop up on Twitter, like in a row. Boom, this kid's in a portal. This kid's a portal. And I'm sitting there with every other coach in there going, man, like, yeah, man, who's going to take that job? And lo and behold, an hour later, I get a phone call from one of my good friends, Darius Nichols, who was my point guard at West Virginia. And he was like, hey, Dennis Gates is going to call you. He's going to offer you a job, I think. And I was like, where at? And he was like, Cleveland State. I said, hold up, what? So I said, all right, man, I'll listen. So Coach Gates actually called me. I was out in Phoenix at the time. We spoke for about 35, 40 minutes. I went up into the, you know, concourse at the arena. I was watching a game at, and, you know, he was just, you know, I got the job here. You know, I know you're from the state of Ohio. I know you're good at what you do, you know, offensively with your post development, recruiting wise. I think you have a chance to be a future head coach at the Division I level. I definitely wanted to bring you in here, you know, bring you on staff. So I said, well, coach, let me call you back. You know, I'm finishing this day up. You know, I got to watch a couple more kids. I'll call you back tonight. So FaceTimed him that night for about 3 hours. And he just kind of gave me, you know, everything that he wanted his program to be about. You know, he talked about, you know, his three C's of, you know, I want to be champions in the classroom, court, and the community. He talked about, you know, his philosophy on fat duet, friendship, love, accountability, trust, discipline, unselfishness, enthusiasm, and toughness. He talked about all these things, and it just resonated with me. He resonated with, you know, he was like, I want to be able to, you know, have my players come to my office every day. I want to be able to give my players hugs and or headlocks. You know, sometimes they're going to need a hug from me. Sometimes they need to put in a headlock. He's like, I want a staff that's like that, and I want a staff that I think can be future head coaches. And so I actually called my wife after that and was like, baby, I'm ready to commit. And she said, commit to what? You're not committing. You're like, you might take a job offer, but you don't commit. Your playing days are over with. But that's how I felt just from sitting down and talking with Coach Gates, just the genuine, you know, tone of his voice. And just knowing, you know, I knew his brother Armand. You know, actually grew up, and I know that earlier story I told you about those guys that when I was in third grade, following those guys at the Park District and seeing those guys play, Armand was one of those guys. So, you know, I didn't know Coach Gates because he was actually going to school in the city at the time. So he didn't stay out in the South Suburbs. He was actually going to school near his grandmother's house. But I knew Armand, and I would always get Coach Gates and his brother confused on the road recruiting wise because they look so similar. But, you know, just being able to connect with Coach and hear his story and what he envisioned for his program. And, you know, I just thought, I'm going to say, Coach, we're how good are we going to be? You know, I was like, we got two players. We're going to have a team. You know, I'm nervous. I'm nervous about it. I'm with you, coach, but I'm with you. And he said, look, if you trust me, I trust you. Let's get this thing going. And it's been a special experience for myself.
It's quite a story. I mean, it's interesting always how jobs come across somebody's desk. And, you know, here you are, you're sitting at a basketball event, you're doing some recruiting, and all of a sudden a call comes in and boom, you're changing jobs. You're telling your wife, hey, we're going to go and do something different. And all of a sudden here you are back in Ohio, back in Cleveland. And as I told you before we talked on the podcast, like I go back with Cleveland State basketball a long way because my dad was a professor at Cleveland State. I think he started maybe in, 1975, 76. Now he's been retired for some 20 odd years, but I grew up going to games in Woodland Gym, going to games in old Public Hall where there was like 200 people at Public Hall and you'd come out. And that was back in the day when downtown Cleveland had no permanent residents. I'd come out and I always felt like it was like a nuclear winter. There was like tumbleweeds rolling down the street. So when I came out of those games and, watching Frank Edwards and Lee Reed and Darren Tillis, and Mike Sweeney and that whole group. And then of course you had the 86 team with Mouse and Clinton Ramsey and Clinton Smith and Kenny Robertson and that whole group. And I got an opportunity at some point to play some pickup basketball down in the gym. And so I spent a lot of time with Cleveland State basketball and I always try to keep an eye on, what's going on. It's always been a program that, Kevin Mackey got it to that point and then obviously had some difficulty. And since then, it's kind of risen up at times and then, kind of gone back down. It seems like Coach Gates and your staff have it going in the right direction. What are some of the things that when you look at Cleveland State basketball, where you guys are right now, what's going really well for you as you look at getting this program where you guys want it to be? What are some of the positives that you see at Cleveland State right now in this moment?
I think the people, administration that we have right now with the President Sands and Scott Garrett, our AD, they are very, very invested in making this a premier program, not only from on campus for our normal students, but also for our student athletes. So they are, they're attacking this thing full go with, the resources and this excitement behind it. I think that's one thing that you need at a school, a mid-major school is an administration that's excited about athletics, that's excited about, the staff they brought in that are invested in, developing, the campus in general. And I think that they've done a great job here at Cleveland State, not even in the, the past, 10 years, 20 of the past 10 years. I came on a visit here unofficially as a sophomore and when Raleigh Mosmino was a coach. And I remember they had a Holiday Inn.
That was the dorm. Absolutely. That was the only dorm. That was the only dorm. That was crazy.
Yeah. So I remember coming my visit and they would show me the Holiday Inn. And I was like, oh, this is the dorm. Like, yeah, they took a Holiday Inn and renovated it. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So it was weird for me. It's like, I'm a sophomore, and I'm like just going around visiting schools. And that was one place they showed me. So to see what they've done, they knocked that down. They built Euclid Commons, so you can have on-campus apartments now. And then they're continuing to do those things, the ideas and the things that the resources they're putting into the school in general, not only athletics, but the school in general is just amazing. So to see that has been just a great, great positive thing. Like I always say, when you see, you see construction cones and you see bulldozers, you know that someone's developing. And I think that we're continuing to develop here at Cleveland State. And our guys here that we've recruited and Coach Gates has brought in, are the same type of way. They're bulldozers. They're construction. They got construction hats on. They're ready to develop something that, has had its ups, has had its downs as of recently. But, obviously, you've seen it. Cleveland State can be a special place and you can win. But now it's all about, maintaining that winning. I think you're going to get the fans and you're going to get people excited about the program. You just have to continue to maintain that and sustain that going forward and, keeping people in the greater Cleveland area excited about Cleveland State and the state of Ohio, getting them excited about Cleveland State. I mean, I've been to airports and, in Dallas or Denver and I've heard people, oh, Cleveland State, man, I watch you guys. Like, so it's just cool to see, a school that's, not a high major school that has a following of people because they see just how hard our guys play. And that's been our bread and butter.
So obviously the key to continue to build the program is being able to recruit and get good players on campus and bring them into your program. So when you're out on the road recruiting, this is a question that I always like to ask coaches who are out doing that type of thing. When you look at a player, how do you balance out watching them play AAU basketball versus watching them play high school basketball? Obviously, there's a certain level of talent and athleticism that you want a player to have. But what are some of the things that you're looking for? And maybe what do you look for specifically with them in a high school setting versus what you might look for them in an AAU setting?
I think it's all the same. And one and the same with those things. And, you know, obviously with our high school, they're more the focal points. A lot of the guys that we're recruiting, they're the man, right? They're the best player on their high school team. And when they go to play, you know, AAU, they're playing these shoot circuits. So, you know, they're playing EYBL basketball. So, you know, maybe they're the fourth option, you know. So just seeing them and how they react to not being the focal point is a huge thing we look for. We recruit a lot about the character and the toughness of a kid. So we try to see the things that aren't going to be kind of put in that box score, right? We want to see those guys that are trying to die for loose balls. We see those guys that are high-fiving their teammates after, you know, even after they mess up a, you know, teammate, just picking their teammate's head up. Those guys that go to the bench and aren't complaining and aren't, you know, sitting in the bench while everybody else is in the huddle. Those things, and that's the reason we've been successful, is because we have guys like that on our team, guys that are willing to sacrifice, guys that, you know, understand that it's bigger than them. And because there's a lot of talented basketball players, right? There's a ton of talented, you know, guys across the country. But talent doesn't always win you games, right? It sometimes, you know, you can have a talented kid who's just so bad for your culture that, you know, you see it anywhere. You see it a million times where people say, well, how did they win? How did they win with those guys? They had, you know, X amount of five stars. It's because you got to notice those little things that kind of go into the game that most don't notice.
Yeah, that intangible piece of a player, I think, is so critical. And I think, you know, you go back in time, and I think it was always important to coaches, but I think there was a bigger willingness to overlook some of those character issues. And I think now we have so many coaches describe themselves as a coach that looks for those character pieces, because you want to look, you're going to spend a lot of time as a college coach with those players that you're recruiting, and you want to spend some time with guys that you like and that are going to have a positive impact on the team environment. And as you said, if you have one or two, it doesn't take very many guys, as you know, to ruin the whole culture. And so you want to make sure that you bring the right guys into the program and continue to build that character, continue to build that continuity, continue to build that camaraderie with your team once they're on campus. What are some things that you guys do to make sure that you balance out the competitiveness? Because obviously you want kids competing hard for playing time, for minutes, for starting positions. And yet at the same time, you want to build up that family atmosphere, that camaraderie between teammates. So how do you guys balance that out? What do you talk about when you're talking about that as a staff of, hey, we got to get our guys competitive, and yet we still want them to compete for each other? How do you balance those two things out?
I mean, that's exactly what we're going through this year. You know, obviously we have a very talented team with older guys, and we're going to be extremely deep. And, you know, a lot of times with guys are worried about themselves, and coach does a great job, and our staff does a great job of allowing them to step outside themselves and be unselfish. I mean, that's one thing that we've been talking about, is like, man, we're a very unselfish team. So any sign of selfishness, we have a thing called hot call-outs where we just call it out, like, man, that's selfish. Like, and we'll sit down and we'll stop practice and we'll talk about it, because it's like, you know, sometimes you see it as a coach and you kind of like, oh, that's just him being him. And I think we require our guys to play so hard that a lot of the times they can't, you know, we guys understand they can't play that hard for, you know, 40 minutes. Everybody wants to play 40 minutes, but with how hard we play, we're like, guys, you can't be that intense for 40 minutes. Like, and I think guys see that. They see how tired they are, and they're willing to sacrifice those minutes because of, you know, what we're trying to accomplish, which is winning out of the Horizon League Championship. So being able to remain competitive, but also having those team building, you know, type moments where we're always together and always talking about stuff. The guys are so in tune with each other and our staff, and they see it from our staff. I think it starts with us as a staff. You know, you look at a staff that's connected with, you know, myself, you know, Drew Joyce, Ryan Sharbaugh, Chase Goldstein. We are guys that when they come in, we're always in each other's offices. We're always talking. We're always joking. We always, you know, have our kids playing with around each other. Our wives, you know, talking to each other. So it's, you see it from us, and they just can't help but to feel as if, you know, they don't want to let their teammates down, us as coaches, and they're willing to sacrifice a lot of those things, even when that selfishness kind of creeps its ugly head into the situation.
What's the biggest challenge that, when you think about building the type of program that you guys want to build there at Cleveland State, what's the biggest challenge that you guys face in order to get there?
I think when we first got here, it was changing the brand. You know, that Cleveland State hadn't been doing well for a couple of years, so you were losing a lot of the local talent just because it wasn't a lot of success, right? And then, you know, if you're gonna stay in your hometown, you want to win. You don't want to stay in your hometown and see your friend and have your friends come to the game and you're sitting there losing by 20. Right? If you're losing by 20, you might as well go across.
Yeah, you might as well be out of town, right? Yeah, you might as well be out of town. So that doesn't get right in your face, right?
Exactly. So I think that's been, you know, that was one of our bigger challenges when we first got in here. Is just, you know, reestablishing those recruiting connections with the city of Cleveland and the high school coaches and the high school coaches and AU coaches around here have been wonderful. You know, obviously, you know, myself and Coach Joyce being from the state, we know a lot of these guys already. So that was a good connection. And then for them to sit down with Coach Gates and to see his vision for the program, they were just excited. Like, man, oh man, they were from day one. Coach was knocking it out of the park with all these guys, just sitting down and explaining to them how he was going to run his program. And so getting those guys, making sure these local kids that they can play at this level. You know, obviously we're going to lose some local kids. You know, there's going to be some local kids that are, you know, five-star kids that are high major guys, but you never know, you know, in this day and age, you know, a lot of these kids, you know, might want to go away. And next thing you know, stuff's not going great with where they're at and they're looking to, you know, come back home. And for us, a talent pool that's around the city of Cleveland, it's just going to be important for us to continue to maintain the relationships up and see where that goes.
Yeah, I think that local flavor is really important. I think it's really critical for mid-major schools that if you have, especially Cleveland State, when you think about being in a metro area, you know, it's not a rural campus. It's not a place that's surrounded by small towns. You're talking about a big major metropolis that has really good basketball all around it and multiple Division I players that are obviously coming out of the Cleveland area every year. And so to be able to, as you said, make those inroads, build those relationships with high school coaches. You guys are Ohio guys that have those kinds of connections. To me, that's really important because obviously you sign a kid from a local high school and suddenly maybe those people were, maybe they were lukewarm Cleveland State fans, or maybe they hadn't been to a game in years. And now suddenly they want to go and see, you know, this kid that they watch play in high school. Now they're going to come and check out some Cleveland State games. You build them up and bring them into your fan base. And I think that's so important. That's always been one of the challenges, I think, at Cleveland State, is how do you get more fans in the door and get people excited about the program? And obviously, the first way you do that is you win. And then I think, too, by having local players involved, it just is one more step towards being able to build up and get that excitement going, like you talked about earlier, that you get people excited about it. And the program obviously has a tradition and they've had success in the past. And when you get it going in the right direction, you start winning, then you start getting people in the door, and then you start building that excitement. I think that's where you guys are headed. It's exciting to be able to see that as someone who, like I said, I grew up with Cleveland State basketball, and it's just exciting to be able to see it starting to head in the right direction. And I love what you guys are doing with it. Before we get out, Rob, I want to ask one more question for you. And that is, when you think about what you get to do every day, I think back to the beginning of your conversation of Coach Huggins tells you, hey, you got to start getting into coaching. And so now you've been in it for quite a while. When you think about what you do on a daily basis, what brings you the most joy about your job as a college basketball coach?
Man, it's a lot. I mean, I'm extremely blessed to be a college basketball coach. I sometimes I'm on the way to work, I'm like, man, it's just awesome. It's just like how many people get to, you know, coach a game that they love at this level and have a career out of it. So God is just like wonderful for allowing me to do this. And, you know, so I thank him every day for that. And just, just the people that I'm around and just being able to associate myself with, you know, future leaders and future husbands and fathers, and like knowing that I'm having some type of positive influence on their life is just super rewarding. Like, you know, we said it before, you know, the wins and losses, the wins are great. Championships are great. You know, the Rise League Championship last year was a wonderful experience. But one thing I told our staff afterwards, man, I was like, man, you know what I'm excited about, who I'm excited for? I was like, man, this is kind of cool that we won it. And I didn't expect to feel that way. I expected to feel like this is just a complete euphoria of like, oh my God, you know, we did it, you know, after, you know, taking over a program that was struggling, we did it. And I was like, man, I'm just so excited for the guys that were here with the last staff and like kind of what they went through with the staff changing and the trust they put in.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, just definitely winning a championship is great. But I think the biggest joy that you get from that is the guys that were here with the last staff. And, you know, our grad assistant, DeLon King, who had been here, and he's a CSU guy through and through. He's been here for 7 years as a manager. Now he's in, you know, working in administration for our program. A win for him and a championship for him, because this is alma mater, was just super. It was just a super exciting moment for myself, and just a joy to see how excited he was and those players' faces, because, you know, again, I think that's something that they can tell their children about, you know, for years to come. You know, their dad was able to play in this NCAA tournament, and that's something that not a lot of kids get to experience, especially in the bubble. I mean, like, you only get one bubble. You only have one, you know, knock on wood, you're only going to have one NCAA bubble ever. And for those guys to play in it was great. So that's the joy that I get, just seeing how excited those guys get about their accomplishments and seeing how they're going to develop to be future, you know, future leaders in the future. So that's going to be great.
Absolutely. I think those relationships, like we've talked about throughout the entire pod, that's really what it's all about. And the wins and losses are nice. The championships are nice. It all obviously feels good when those things happen. But ultimately, I think those relationships and being able to see the success that the young man that you're getting an opportunity to coach, that's really what it's all about. Before we wrap up, Rob, I want to give you a chance to share how people can find out more about your program at Cleveland State. How can they reach out to you after listening? If they got a question, they just want to find out more about you and what you're doing. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Well, if you want to contact me, you can shoot me an email. My email is r.c.summers75@csuohio.edu. I'm really good about getting back on emails, and I look forward to, you know, talk with anybody, you know, whether it's about, you know, young coaches that are in this profession, you know, that want to, you know, want to give you a climb that ladder, or, you know, people that have questions about our program, and or anything about, you know, our schedule or anything like that. I mean, obviously you follow me on Twitter, and I'm at RobSummers33. That's a Twitter or Instagram. So most of my Instagram is pictures of my kids. So if you follow me outside of basketball season, it's all my kids. So you can see my kids, but during basketball season, I have a lot of basketball content on there. And then obviously starting up with official practice here soon, you'll see a lot of our guys on there as well. But CSU_basketball is our Twitter and our Instagram. So people can go on there. That's going to have all CSU stuff. If you don't want to see Rob the Third and Marina, my 5 year, my 2 year old, you can go there just to see pictures of our guys and videos of our workouts. But again, my emails, it would be great. You know, my email is a great way to get in contact with me. Like I said, I respond pretty quickly to those. If anybody, any local coaches or anybody that wants to come watch practice, I've had several people hit us up. You know, you got to wear a mask indoors on CSU campus, but we definitely, you know, encourage people to come watch us and, you know, pick our brains a little bit, because we're all trying to learn from one another. So I go to high school practices all the time, and I'm constantly looking at drills and be like, hey, I like that. I might have to take that and use that for my own. So definitely look forward to talking to people about that stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing how we all borrow and steal, right, from other coaches. No matter what the level is, there's always something that you can learn no matter what you do. That's one of the great things about the game of basketball is coaches are willing to share, and there's always something new that you can learn.
Definitely.
Cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight to jump on with us. Really appreciate it. It's always great to have local guys here in the Cleveland area. We've had a lot of Cleveland area local high school coaches working our way through the Division I level in the state of Ohio, and I'm super appreciative of you and your time. So thank you. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.